Welcome to Behind the Curtain with me, Rhiannon Cars. I'm thrilled to be welcomed by Oliver DeLucia Crook, or Ollie, as I and many others will know him. Ollie is our Business Development Director and is a member of the Operations Board. He's been with the business for 12 years, officially based in Liverpool, but with very much a national role. Ollie works closely with people from across the business, including the bid team, our BD managers, and more broadly, the leadership of our specialisms and regions. He's responsible for setting the work-winning strategy for Curtains and ensuring that we're reaching our goals. Today, I have the pleasure of talking to him about how he identifies and nurtures where Curtains' next opportunity is coming from and how he makes sure our clients are happy and keep wanting to come back. So without further ado, Ollie, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get stuck in, shall we, straight away. Can you tell us, in your role as kind of, you know, work winning, business development, obviously clients are at the absolute heart of that. So why is client experience so important? And if you could you kind of bring that to life, bring some color to it with some examples perhaps of where you've seen it done brilliantly at Curtains?
Absolutely, yeah. We did a lot of work on Curtains Way client experience last year. So I think a few of the stories and the background to it have been communicated pretty well through the webinar and other comms last year. Mm-hmm. I think the best way of articulating client experience is to put people in the mindset of understanding the client's mm-hmm. mindset,
yeah.
giving a bit of empathy. And I love people will have heard a couple of these examples before, but the examples in our own lives
yeah.
of the courier example, I think is really good, where you order a Christmas present for your partner mm-hmm. and it or a birthday present. It says on the website it'll be here by 5 o'clock on Friday, and you don't hear anything all week
mm-hmm.
and it arrives at 4:59.
Mm-hmm.
So from that company's perspective, they've met their kind of outcome, their deliverable.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've had a really stressful week because you've not heard anything. Is it going to turn up? Do you need to buy something else for your partner
yeah.
because it's the birthday on Saturday and you've left it last minute anyway?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the ones that really empathise with the client and the customer in that scenario is the ones that give you updates every day.
Mm-hmm.
Where is it? It's arrived at the depot. It's out for delivery. And it makes the deliverable is exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
You receive it by 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
But the experience you've had during that week is totally different.
Yeah. And I suppose even if it is delayed, even if it actually doesn't come at 4:59, if you've had that text message, if you've had that email to say, we're really, really sorry, it's not going to be with you at 4:59, but it will be with you at 8 o'clock, you're like, okay, as long as I know it's coming, I actually mind less. I'd rather it was here before five, but actually, as long as I know that it's going to be here before my partner's birthday
Absolutely.
Or whatever, then actually just that communication really just reassures you and puts you at ease, doesn't it?
Definitely. I'll give a couple of examples of Curtains
in
a minute, but let me do one more
mm-hmm.
just different industry to try and get the mindset.
Yeah.
And the other one I love is the restaurant example
mm-hmm.
where you sat there and it's really busy, and if they don't come and talk to you and tell you that it's going to be half an hour before your starters arrive, you get really agitated.
Yeah.
And you're looking at each other thinking, where's our food? You're looking at your clock. If they come over with a free drink and say, we're really busy, it's not going to be here for half an hour. You relax and you have a chat and you catch up.
Mm.
So I think they're just a couple of nice examples of where proper communication and
absolutely.
Really open communication and ongoing regular comms is really important to the client experience.
I suppose what we're talking about there is just being human as well, isn't
it?
You know, it is just being able to say, listen, there is a half an hour delay until you're going to get your piri piri prawns or whatever.
Yeah.
But welcome. We're really glad you're here. We want you to enjoy yourself. We're going to look after you. And that, brings us back to our values, doesn't it? Of being human. If we can just be honest, if people can feel that they can trust us and what we're saying, then that's really how it translates into our kind of service, I suppose, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think I promised to bring it back to Curtains.
Yeah, go on.
So I will do now.
Yeah.
I think a lot of we've concentrated over the years a lot on the technical side. We are
mm-hmm.
technically really good.
Mm-hmm.
All of our teams deliver great deliverables. The outputs are brilliant. Over the years, I've seen that the technical side almost becomes it's almost a given. A client, the client requirement isn't a great design. Mm-hmm. So the experience is just so important. Mm-hmm. And again, over the years, I've seen where we've had positive feedback and negative feedback. It's very rarely about the actual deliverable. It's mm-hmm. always about the communication, the responsiveness, how available our teams were, mm-hmm. the input into meetings, being proactive. I think it's always about that. So I think the client experience mm-hmm. and the curtains way, that's our differentiator. Mm-hmm. That's why we are better than our peers and mm-hmm. our competitors. Mm-hmm. And that's what people really look for. And mm-hmm. that's why people keep coming back for more as well.
Yeah. You've mentioned a couple of times there, Ollie, the Curtains Way, which has obviously been an enormous kind of campaign and I suppose kind of the headline for our approach as a business. But for those who perhaps aren't aware of what we mean when we talk about the Curtains Way, perhaps new to the business, could you just talk us through very, very briefly, what do we mean when we talk about the Curtains Way?
Yeah, I think there are 10 principles. And I'm not going to reel them off because mm-hmm. I'll forget one. But the 10 principles of the client experience are the kind of things we've been talking about today already, really. The responsiveness, mm-hmm. the picking up the phone, the responding to emails. And one that I really like as the example is, quite often a client will ask us a question and you might not know the answer to it, but by going back and just sending a holding email, I'm going to look into that. It mm-hmm. probably won't be until Thursday. Again, going back to that restaurant example,
yeah.
The client knows we're on it. They know what we are doing about it. And they know that we're looking into the answer for them.
Yeah.
So even though we're not responding with the answer straight away, we're going back to them. A couple of the other principles are around input into meetings, being proactive, being in the room. So if you're on a Teams meeting, don't be on your other screen, mm-hmm. replying mm-hmm. to your emails. Just about, yeah, being present and proactive and prepared as well. Mm-hmm. We all have in the way we're doing business now, we all have quite often back-to-back meetings, and you not given the perception that you've just come from another one and you're not actually sure what the meeting is.
Being prepared,
having mm-hmm. your reports ready and all that sort of thing.
It's kind of like that baseline expectation, isn't it? You know, like it's what can you expect from Curtains? I suppose I always think about the Curtains Way as being, it's the way we do things around here.
Yeah.
When you work with Curtains, this is what you can expect. Yes, we're present and yes, we will get back to you and we will have good communication. But I suppose ultimately it comes back to having good relationships, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And ultimately we always say that, you know, our favorite clients are the ones that keep on coming back to us, right?
Yeah.
And those ones that we've built a relationship with. And I think that most people, if not everybody at Curtains, would say that when they've got a relationship with clients, actually the work is often I suppose more satisfying to do, more satisfying to work on as well. Yeah. Because you've built up that kind of relationship with the people that you're working with.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's key as well. And we talk a lot about how we want clients who are aligned with our values and that do the type of work that we want to be mm-hmm. doing. And if we're not looking after them well, mm-hmm. then they're going to go on, and it takes a lot more effort to find a new client than it does to look after the ones that we've already got.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Okay, thank you. I'm going to move us on then to talk about our key sector strategy. So I'll ask you in a second to kind of just give us an overview of what we mean when we talk about key sectors. But I'd also like to hear about how you define that key sector strategy and what about it has worked really effectively for Curtains. So I suppose three parts of that question. What is it and how have you defined it? But also, how does that work for us?
Yeah, I think we've... Historically, and our business units operate regionally, mm-hmm. by and large. We've always had key sectors that kind of cut across that. Mm-hmm. So at the areas of work and the sectors that we work in quite often are cross-regional. There might be a client that work all over the UK and Ireland. There might be an architect who has a head of education. Mm-hmm. that we need to engage with, but not within a specific region because they could be working anywhere.
Yeah.
So I think that the key sector strategy is all about trying to identify those clients, those sectors, and those areas of expertise that we haven't got in every single region, and supporting converting opportunities wherever they might arise.
Right, okay.
So there's last year in 2025, we formalized that strategy slightly,
mm-hmm.
and we identified 10 growth or key sectors.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a few examples I'm sure we'll talk mm-hmm. about that'll pick up. So again, I won't list them out, but I think that's been really key to our success over the last sort of few years. We're mm-hmm. having that more national, more company-wide focus, almost irrespective of region mm-hmm. and specialism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was the first part of the question. Mm-hmm. What was the second part of the question? Sorry.
I think it'd just be good to understand kind of like how that's worked for us effectively, I suppose. How has that maybe altered our approach in being able to define those clear kind of key sectors, right? That's what we see as the emerging sectors, and those are the ones that we absolutely want to be protecting and maintaining. How has that kind of supported us in our work winning?
Yeah, I think there's the sectors are obviously sort of categorized in sort of slightly different ways, and we use the term growth sector
mm-hmm.
a lot,
mm-hmm.
and we would be talking there specifically about things like data centers, like energy, like science and tech, where mm-hmm. Some of which we have some track record, and we've had track record over the years, and some which are sort of totally new. So I think data centers is a good example. You can't avoid, every time you read the news,
yeah.
everyone is talking about data centers. And probably 3 years ago, we hadn't really done any.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think the way we've done that is by looking at almost like the building blocks mm-hmm. of what we are good at and how they can be applied to a particular sector. So the first data center we won was one in London called Bidder Street.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Evans, who we all know can mm-hmm. sell anything to anyone.
Yeah, absolutely.
He came up with this concept of the building blocks that mm-hmm. helped us to win that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all around modern methods of construction, sustainability, and sort of geotechnical ground conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And when he applied those building blocks to that project, the client was kind of blown away, mm-hmm. even though we didn't have a big long list of 20 we'd done previously.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So by building those, using those building blocks, we were able to almost like win the first one.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
we've
yeah.
all seen you start to gain momentum in things.
Yeah.
Once you've got the first one, you've got something to talk about. And then more follow.
Absolutely. And when you say that, you know, we weren't doing data centers 3 years ago, the reality is nobody really
yeah,
was,
were
they?
It was nothing like it is now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that is one of the things that we make sure that we do is responding to the market, responding
absolutely.
To what's happening kind of geopolitically as well. You know, where yeah. do we need to be kind of placing curtains to make, you know, make the most of those opportunities? And I suppose in terms of our competitors, we're not going up against competitors that have done 35 data centers particularly, are we? So telling that story, as you've just described then, that, you know, Dan does so brilliantly, so eloquently, it is weaving that story and ultimately making people trust that we have that expertise, even if we don't have that direct experience.
Definitely. Yeah. I think the term growth sector as well can be a sector where we actually have some presence.
Mm.
So a great example, I think, is healthcare,
mm.
where we've worked on healthcare since we were set up, you know, 6 years
yeah.
ago. But there's a real opportunity at the moment with the new hospital program.
Mm.
And this is something that we've been talking about for a few years now through various sort of political changes. But that's a growth opportunity for us. And we are better set to exploit
yeah.
it. But we
mm-hmm.
still had to work really hard because all of our much bigger competitors are going for those same projects.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So by using our previous experience and the relationships that we've got, we were able to, or we are being able to exploit that,
yeah.
and we're in a really good position.
It's great to see it from both perspectives, isn't it? From those new and emerging growth sectors, but also from those ones that we've got decades worth of experience, but we still see them as growth sectors. And I suppose what it goes to prove there is you can never kind of become complacent in a sector, even when you've got, you know, some of the biggest healthcare projects in the country under our belt. We still want to make sure that we're kind of pursuing more opportunities in that sector because there will always be opportunities there for us to grab, won't there?
Absolutely, yeah. The other growth sector that I think is worth just talking about briefly on that building blocks
mm-hmm.
idea is on the defence sector.
Yeah.
So we have a growth sector that we call secure buildings,
mm-hmm.
which includes custodial, judicial and defence. We're very strong in the custodial sector.
Mm-hmm.
On defence, we've done less over the years. And it was another one where, even before the last couple of years, where defence has been even more at the forefront of the sort of political agenda.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was already potentially a growth area for us. And again, we looked at what the building blocks of those defence projects were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was all the types of building we do in other sectors, but just with a different usage.
Yeah.
So single living accommodation for service personnel is very similar to student accommodation.
Of course.
Some of the technical buildings would be very similar to what we do for our industrial clients and our sort of logistics and distribution clients. So by using our experience as those building blocks, we've been able to position ourselves really well for the ongoing emerging defence opportunities as well.
That's such an interesting insight. I think people will agree in terms of like just pivoting with that experience. And that ultimately is the art of business development, isn't it? It's understanding right which parts of Curtin's great mosaic do we pull together to tell the story that we need for this opportunity. So that's fantastic. Thank you. And I suppose on that, perhaps connected, you always say that everybody at Curtin's has got a part to play in work winning and business development. And I think sometimes that's quite difficult to grasp and to understand. It's like, well, hang on a minute. I come in and I sit at my desk and I design these amazing buildings and I can walk through the cities and the streets and I can see them, but I'm not part of actually winning that work. I'm just part of delivering it. And I think it would be great if you could just talk us through, what do you mean when you say everybody has a part to play? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think this is really key to our sort of ongoing success. I think we do the Curtin's Academy every year.
Yeah.
And so how many times have we done it? God, 8, 10, however many.
I dread to think. Yeah, so for anyone listening who's not quite aware what we're talking about here, that's our Curtin's Academy. So new starters in the business who are coming through straight from university, enroll in kind of like a 4-year structured program which teaches them, I suppose, everything really about success at Curtin's and ultimately drives people through to their chartership and supports people to get to that point in their career. Ollie and I and other members of the work winning and marketing team deliver a BD and marketing day. So that curriculum, it's not just about learning the sort of technical expertise, is it? It's also about the kind of commercial, the business acumen of being a member of the Curtin's team. Sorry, just to give a bit of context to that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, so we tend to ask the question at the beginning of that, who already thinks that you're involved in business development and marketing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think last year was the first time that more than 3 or 4 people, a couple of people have stood up. And then we go through what we call the life cycle of work winning at Curtin's. And then you ask the same question at the end of the day and everyone stands up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we categorise sort of work winning into 4 main areas, I think. So there's business development, which I would kind of define as opportunity generation.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we find the opportunities? How do we record
them?
The sniff list. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. There's opportunity conversion, which would be all about the bid team and what Katie and her team do.
Mm-hmm.
There's marketing, you know, what Kate and the team do. And then there's the delivery, and particularly around the client engagement, client experience that we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's, in each of those 4 areas, there's lots of ways that everyone in the business can get involved in. And I think when people say get involved in business development, there's a perception that BD is sales, it's going out playing golf, it's drinking coffee, it's going out in the evenings. It's very, very broad like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone in this business is engaging with clients and collaborators and referrers all the time. You know, the much closer to the coalface, if you like, than we are.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that engagement happens, I think, is almost the key, and it's that baseline.
Yeah.
And that then links into opportunity generation, because they'll be talking to an architect. All of our teams will be saying, oh, how's this project going? Getting feedback. But also, what else are you looking at?
Mm-hmm.
What else are you working on? What are you bidding for at the moment? And by feeding that back to the sort of regional directors and to the BD team, that then creates the sniff list for us all collectively to go and chase.
Mm-hmm.
on the bid conversion side, you know, Katie and the team, CVs, case studies, project information, constantly coming through it, that's really key as well. We want the best examples of added value. And it's not about the really basic kind of project description that is sometimes what is seen as a case study.
Yeah.
It's how did we add value? How did those people, how did our people, our teams actually add value?
Yeah.
And having that is, that's how we convert the opportunities. And then looking at it from a marketing perspective, having the profile, the knowledge of milestones on projects, what should be on social media, what should we be shouting about, what's the latest news, that's part of work winning as well. So when you look at that whole sort of life cycle, everyone in the business is involved in all of that to greater and lesser degrees.
Yeah, and there are, absolutely, I heard you say more than once about this virtuous circle, and I often think that you're in the middle of a, you know, you're heading towards a deadline and you're feeling the pressure and you really feel like you're kind of under the cosh to get, you know, the drawings out on time. But actually that sometimes is the time where you need to also be thinking about work winning, although it feels like it's the last thing on the to-do list. That actually is the opportunity to really prove our worth as a business, to build those relationships, and also to be aware of, right, when this project comes to an end, this project closes out, what are we going to be working on next?
Yep.
And, you know, to bring it back to being employee-owned as well, we are quite literally all responsible for kind of the future of Curtains and that work and that pipeline coming through.
Absolutely. There's a standard model in business development, which is all around, it's almost like a wave curve. And when you're busy, business development reduces. And then when that work reduces, goes away, there's less feed in the pipeline because you haven't been doing business development.
Yeah.
So the more people we have involved in that, the more people we have involved in all four of those areas of work with him, the greater success we'll have, because it'll reduce those the wave curve.
And steadies it out, doesn't
steadies
it?
Out. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not to say that, you know, everybody has to be out there posting on LinkedIn daily or going out for coffees, unless they want to, in which case, crack on and go for it. And we obviously do absolutely encourage that. But it's just understanding the, you know, the part that people play. So it's really, really helpful to kind of give us that overview. Thank you. So Ollie, obviously a big part of the Curtains Way is working together. You know, we're a national business across multiple regions. We've got a number of specialisms, but our ethos has always been to kind of approach things and deliver things as one team. So could you just kind of talk us through the importance of working together as that kind of part of the Curtains Way?
Yeah, I think there's actually a really nice example that I give quite a lot on this, which was in our Manchester office, but it also crossed over into different specialisms and also the key sectors. So it was around, I talked earlier about the new hospital programme. One of the schemes that we're doing in that is North Manchester General Hospital, which is a huge project, sort of £1 billion plus, one of the biggest projects we'll deliver. That came from various different routes, and I think it's a really nice example of how different people were involved in both generating and converting that opportunity. So we first got involved in that through our transport planning team, through an architect, and they did some of the technical master planning, again, that we talk about a lot as one of our sort of core offerings. And that got us involved and got us the site knowledge. But then ended up coming out through one of our CNS clients, which at the time was Bruntwood. So you wouldn't have expected a public sector, very large project to come through a private sector source, but it was because of an arrangement that they had. So we used another relationship to receive that opportunity. And the fact that we'd been doing transport planning over the previous sort of 6 months added to the sort of likelihood and towards converting that opportunity, and it also linked to the key sector strategy, because we were working on Midlands Metropolitan University Hospital in the Midlands, and that was one of the few very large projects that were ongoing at that time. So we were able to use key sector experience from elsewhere in the business, a relationship from a different sector, the ongoing presence and workload of transport planning, and so all of those things combined to give us the opportunity to convert a project that without all of those aspects, we probably wouldn't have won that project.
Yeah, I mean, it's the perfect example, isn't it, of these various different kind of threads of curtains all kind of weaving together. And ultimately, from the client's perspective, they're absolutely winning, aren't they? Because
absolutely.
What they get is that really broad spread of specialists who've got that experience that they can bring to the table.
Yeah. It actually laid up again even more than that, because there was another project on that site, which was a different trust. It was a mental health trust. And through a different architect, actually, we got the opportunity. And the fact that we were already doing the master plan, we'd already been into transport planning, we were appointed on the acute hospital at that point, that actually helped us to convert the mental health project as well. So it just all fitted together sort of really well to convert it for the business.
Yeah, perfect. I mean, more of that, please.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that'd make life a lot more effective and a lot easier. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to move us on then. Thank you so much, Ollie. I mean, that's just fascinating. I think everyone will agree kind of that insight and the examples as well that bring it to life are just perfect. But I'm just going to move us on then to a couple of our kind of quick fire questions. Don't overthink these too much. But tell us, right, talk about broad spectrum question. What's your favourite thing to do?
most people that know me well know I've got a little boy.
Yeah, Seth. Good old Seth.
He's 9 and a half. I think everything, my life, he's my why, you know, that he is my reason for doing everything I do. Anything to do with Seth would be my answer. And Sarah, better say that.
Yeah, shout out to Sarah.
Yeah, shout out to Sarah.
But she knows where she is in the pecking order.
Yeah, I know where I am as well, below the dog as well. But anything with Seth, and everyone knows Seth, a lot of people will know, Seth loves football.
Yeah.
I love football. So I think my favourite thing to do is watching Seth on a Friday night, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, playing football and enjoying himself.
Yeah, I mean, it's lucky you love that, because you do it a lot.
I do it a lot. So it's a good job he likes it as well, actually. Maybe those two things are linked.
Yeah, perfect. I love it. Thank you. Okay, so in between the, the touch line, is that what you call it? Sideline? Where are you on the side
touch
of the football
line.
Pitch? Touchline. Okay, so in between your times on the touchline, imagine you're having a dinner party, right? You, Sarah, Seth, Wilbur, if you like, are hosting a dinner party, and you can invite one. It might be a bit weird if it was just one person, right? But okay, tell me, who would be your one invite? Who would you love to have around that table with you?
That's a good question. I'll waffle for a minute while I think. I've answered this question over the years, actually, and I think it's really interesting how people's answer to this question changes.
Yeah, it evolves. Yeah,
so
yeah.
I remember about 10 years ago answering this, and my answer was Dave Brailsford, who was the British cycling head. And he was the one that came up with the idea of marginal gains.
Okay.
Which is quite interesting at the time. But the perceptions of British cycling changed over the years for various reasons. So he probably wouldn't answer Dave Brailsford anymore. So I think it's quite interesting.
Dave, you're out.
Yeah, so he's out. hasn't made the cut. This is a controversial one, actually. But again, I was asked about 4 or 5 years ago, and my answer was Elon Musk.
Oh.
Because at that point, he was seen as very innovative, very driven. He was changing the world.
But then
things change again.
Yeah.
Perceptions change. So they've been previous answers to the question. I think it would probably be a relatively boring Barack Obama, maybe.
Michelle. Go on, I'll give you another chair.
Well,
and Michelle,
we can have the couple over. That makes it easier.
I think so.
Barack and Michelle Obama. And I think the reason being, he's just such an inspirational character. If Seth sat at the table, he'd be a great character for Seth to be inspired by. Yeah, so there you go.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm going to take another chair at your dinner table, because I'm going to sit on it.
Fine.
Okay.
You are more than welcome. Bring Seth as well.
Thanks. Okay, so thinking about the kind of year ahead, what are you most looking forward to this year? What excites you?
I think there's, again, a couple of ways of answering that. I think from a personal perspective, one of our news resolutions was to travel a bit more, have more experiences. So I think in a year's time, I'd like to be looking back at a couple more holidays. We're going to Rome.
Yeah, amazing.
Got a summer holiday booked as well. So so I think having a bit more experience rather than things. from a work perspective, I suppose, to be on track with the sort of 2030 plan.
Yeah.
We won't have achieved the 2030 plan by the end of 2026, but it'd be great to be on the way towards that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, the roadmap's clear now, isn't it? So we really will know this time next year, is that, you know, that we're looking at the horizon, is it within reach or not? And like, yeah, hopefully it will be.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay, so a year today, imagine you're back on the podcast. What will you be doing? Where will you be? What will life look like for Ollie a year today?
Yeah, I think my role's changed a lot in the last sort of couple of years, really. Mm. And there's been a journey from doing everything to trying to lead and facilitate and encourage others and give other people the skills. So I think I would hope I'll be further along that journey to have helped 390 people improving their knowledge and experience of business development rather than trying to do everything myself.
Absolutely, yeah, perfect. And it's interesting because we've had a really similar theme come through from other people, particularly at kind of, you know, board director level, and really that recognition that actually our role isn't necessarily to do. And a lot of us and our experience in the business has been that actually has been what we've done historically. But I think, you know, much more clearly now the strategy is facilitate others, coordinate others, help others to grow. So I think, you know, what you're describing there is absolutely very, you know, very much in the spirit of the plan.
Brilliant.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for coming on and joining us on Behind the Curtain today, Ollie. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.